Okay, so we're going to talk about three different sections of the shir. Section number one is going to be the institution of a Baal Koreh, that you're going to have a set member of the congregation read the Torah for everybody. Why does that exist? That's section number one. Section number two, we're going to speak about the eight psukim at the end of the Torah. Who wrote them, and what does this mean, Yachid Koreosam, that the Gemara has. And finally, we're going to obviously have a separate section, section number three, of what's going on with the opinion of the Rambam, and in addition, also the opinion of the Ravid. So those are the three sections. Again, the institution of Baal Koreh, number two, the special status of the eight psukim at the end of the Torah, and finally, focusing a special focus on the opinion of the Rambam. So how do we get here? Why are we talking about the eight psukim? Like, is this something we should have done before Simchas Torah? Maybe. But our Gemara in Megillah. So before we get to the eight psukim, we're going to talk about the Baal Koreh. So our Gemara in Megillah, if you look at source number one, I didn't give you the whole page of our Gemara. Rather, I just gave you the one line because it was one line. So the Megillah could be read by two people. As Rabbi Lichtman spoke last week, you cannot have two people read Kriyas HaTorah. What in Masha Ein Kein Patorah, you need one person to read Kriyas HaTorah. So in that context, a lot of the Rishonim bring up the phenomenon that nowadays we have one person read, but instead of being the Ola, traditionally, what it used to happen, the person who got the Aliyah, the Ola, would get called up, and he would read, and he would read his portion. But the Gemara never mentions that that changed. The Gemara never mentions that that changed, and that seems to be the working assumption the entire time during the days of the Gemara. However, the Rishonim already, starting in the Rush, and all the Baalei Tosafos know that tradition changed. Some reason, instead of the Ola, the person who is getting the Aliyah, going up and reading the Psukim, it switched to what we have today, that the Ola makes the Bracha. We're going to have to talk about the Bracha. That's an upcoming topic also in a few weeks. The Ola is going to make the bracha still, but the one who reads is the set Baal Koreh, the set reader. And the question is, why? Like, traditionally, it makes a lot of sense. You get called, you make a bracha, you read. Again, how many brachas we make, we're going to talk about in a few weeks. But why would it be that we're going to switch from the person who gets the aliyah, the person who gets called up, reading to a set Baal Koreh? So you saw two different opinions in the Rishonim. One is the opinion of Tosfos. Again, this is the Tosfos Megillah, but it's really the Shita of Tosfos, the opinion of Tosfos throughout Shas. It's also the opinion of the Ritva and the Ran. I think this is the view of most Rishonim. Very simple. We don't want to embarrass people. What's going to happen? The Ola gets called up to read, but he has no idea how to read. So he's going to get up there, and it's going to be extremely embarrassing. And therefore, we say better to have a set reader rather to embarrass people. And there is a precedent for this. What's the precedent? The precedent is the mitzvah of mikra bikurim. We have an obligation when you go and bring bikurim, you bring your first fruits to Yerushalayim, you're going to read certain psukim, the psukim that we actually darshan during the Haggadah, during Maggid. If you're wondering what those psukim are, in the context of bikurim, which itself is interesting, but not for now. But in those contexts, not everyone knows how to necessarily say the psukim properly. So the Mishnah tells us that originally, those who knew how to read the psukim would say it themselves. And those who didn't, you know, the Kohanim would say it for you. But what ended up happening, people stopped coming because it was very embarrassing. Like, this guy before me and the guy before me and the guy after me, everyone knew how to read the psukim. I'm going to come. I'm not going to know how to read. Better for me not to come and not be embarrassed and not offer my bikur. And that is the parallel. We have this idea that we'll make certain changes. And the change they made is, okay, so the Kohanim will always read for mikra bikur. So we have already a precedent that will change things due to embarrassment factors and have one set person read for everybody rather than everyone read themselves. So that's what Tosfos points to. Tosfos here does not make that comparison, but Tosfos in other places does. So however, the Rush quotes that reason and disagrees. And he says that can't be the reason. It's not a good comparison. Because what ended up happening by Bikurim? When they were embarrassed, what did we say happened? They stopped coming and offering Bikurim. There is a mitzvah asay to offer Bikurim and bring it to Yerushalayim. So if they weren't bringing things because they were embarrassed, so that's really bad. It's not just about the embarrassment, but it's also that led to them not fulfilling the mitzvah asay. However, when it comes to Kriyas HaTorah, what happens if you just don't have that person read? Don't give an aliyah to someone who doesn't know how to read. Don't call them up in the first place. And it wouldn't be a problem. There's no mitzvah asay that they have to be the ones to read the Torah. Rather, you could just have the people who know how to read call those people up, and there won't be an issue. So that leads the Rush to giving a totally different explanation. Namely, you know, everyone knows this guy. There's a guy. I know how to read. Yeah, okay, I don't know how to read, but I think I know how to read. So he's going to get up there.
No, he knows he knows how to read.
He knows he knows how to read, but we know that he doesn't know how to read. Exactly. And he's going to want to read, and he thinks he knows how to read, but really, he doesn't know how to read, so the whole congregation will not fulfill their obligation. But if we don't call him up, what's going to happen? He's going to be not embarrassed. He's going to fight. He's going to say, I want to read. What is this? This isn't fair. I know how to read. So to avoid disputes, that's why we have this takana of the Baal Kore. And the Rush even goes so much farther in his rejection of Tosos. He says, if we didn't have people read who were embarrassed, so maybe their embarrassment will lead them to actually learn how to read. It would be better for them in the long run. So those are the two different opinions, namely during the times of the Gemara. We definitely had the Ola, the one who got the Aliyah, read. Nowadays, we have the Baal Kore. Two opinions in the Rishonim. Opinion number one, Tosfos and most of the other Rishonim, is to avoid embarrassment for those who don't know how to read. According to the Rush, it's because the people who assume they know how to read, and it's going to end up leading to fighting, so therefore, we're just going to say, across the board, one person reads the Aviyah D'Yeshua. So that's just point number one. It emerges, again, a very fundamental idea, and obviously impacts our every time we do Kriyas HaTorah, why we have a set Baal Kore. But in that conversation, if you notice, the Tosos in our source number two is also alludes, and part of the discussion there very much intersects with the Shmona Psukim. So it comes up not in the Gemara or Shmona Psukim, but really comes up in this Tosos and Tosos on Chaf Aleph and Beis and Megillah. So we're going to use that as a point of tradition. That was section number one of the Shir. Section number two is the Eight Psukim. So there's a Gemara in Menachos on Daf Lamed. Hopefully you all saw it. And that was the longer Gemara, so I gave that as if it was the Gemara in Megillah. Hope that was okay. But who wrote the last eight psukim of the Torah? Right, the last eight psukim of the Torah are about
Moshe's death.
So can Moshe really write about Moshe's death? So there's two opinions in the Gemara. We have the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, or maybe a different Tana, which is Moshe didn't write it. Can't be Moshe wrote it. Moshe can't be alive and write that Moshe died. That's not factually true. So it must be that who wrote it? Yoshua. So that's opinion number one. That's Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Shimon argues, no, that Moshe really was the one who wrote it, and he wrote it with tears, because it can't be that Moshe wrote most of the Torah and not all of the Torah, right? A Torah needs to be complete. Even if you're messing with one letter, the Torah is puzzle. So how can Moshe write a Torah and not have the entire text of the Torah? Therefore, it must be that Moshe wrote the entire Torah, but when he wrote it with tears. We're going to get back to the tears point in a second. And not only that, the Gemara tells us that there's this din, Yochad Kore Osam. Again, literally, an individual reads these psukim. So we're going to have to figure out, what does that mean? But the Gemara originally assumes that there's something different about these eight psukim. Which opinion is that going like? Is that according to Rabbi Yehuda or according to Rabbi Shimon? Right? Is it according to the opinion that Yehoshua wrote them? Or is it according to the opinion that Moshe wrote them? So the Gemara says it's very understandable according to Rabbi Yehuda. Namely, if there's a unique status to these eight psukim, well, if Moshe wrote the entire Torah and Yehoshua wrote the last eight, that makes a lot of sense why these last eight psukim would be different. But the Gemara says even according to Rabbi Shimon, it could be Yachid Kore Osam. So that really works according to both opinions. Why? Because it has this expression, Hol V'ishni Ishni. Since these psukim were different, Moshe wrote them with tears, therefore a Yachid Kore Osam. So therefore, just to summarize what we're getting from the Gemara, that there's two opinions. Yehoshua wrote them, Moshe wrote them, but he wrote them with tears, and both opinions subscribe to the idea of Yachid Kore Osam, which begs the question, what is Yachid Kore Osam? I translated it, an individual reads them, but what does that mean? And why is it true? Why is the eight psukim going to be different than the rest of the Torah? So I think we quoted five different opinions as to what Yachid Kore is. You know, you ask a Jew a question, how many different opinions do you get? You have five different opinions that I found as to what Yachid Kore is. So the first perspective is the opinion of Rashi. So Rashi says in source number four, again, this is Rashi in Menachos on the Gemara, Ed Adam Echad Koran V'ein Mafsik Bin Sayim K'dei Lamod Acher V'likros. One person, the person who starts the reading, he should make sure to be the one who finishes the eight psukim. Don't be like all of a sudden, I want to make a break in these psukim and have someone else, you know, this is the week, there's a chassan, there's a this, I need to make a break. One person reads through the entire eight psukim. There needs to be a unity. We'll get back to this idea in a couple of minutes. But one person needs to read the entire thing. Therefore, don't break up the eight psukim and have one person read the first four psukim and the second person read the second. And that makes a lot of sense with the words. Yachid koreasem, one person should read them, not two people, right? And therefore, you shouldn't do that. That's
that assumes that you're having a different person for the last day.
No, it assumes that you're having a different person for the last day. Correct. Correct. Yes. Good. No, it can in theory be the same person.
Yeah.
It can in theory be the same person, but he needs to make sure to read all of them.
Okay.
And not to have some type of break. Okay, so that is the opinion of Rashi. So the Shita Mikubetzas in source number 5 quotes the opinion of the Rimigash. A lot to say about Rimigash. I think we quoted him actually last year, but we'll leave that to the side for right now. Again, very influential in the world of the Rambam. He was actually the Rambam's father's Rebbe, and the Rambam had a lot of extreme praise for him. But we won't get into that right now. The Rimigash has a different view. If you look in the first line, Shmona Pesukim Shabbatora Yachid Korosim Kolomar. So exactly what you were talking about a second ago, that the person who was reading the psukim prior to the last 8 psukim, he cannot keep going until read to the end of the Torah. Namely, you need to cut it off and make that separation. What's his reason? Why is it that the person who was reading before the 8 psukim can't continue to read the final 8 psukim? Shenimsa korei masha kasa Moshe in masha kasa Yehoshua. Again, he's assuming in both his explanations, like one opinion in the Gemara, namely that Yehoshua wrote them, and therefore he takes it in two opposite perspectives. So according to his opinion, namely that the person beforehand has to stop and break, there has to be the sharp break between the 8 psukim and the rest of the Torah. That is to highlight that there is going to be, again, the bold, the second bold, Kedei Shehei Nikr Shelo Kasvan Moshe Ela Yehoshua. If I say stop, and I need another person to read these ones, I am separating the two. And I'm doing that to indicate Moshe wrote all the rest of the Torah. And this is no, we're out of Moshe's world, we are now in Yehoshua's world. And therefore, I need to have a separate person read what Yehoshua wrote. And he notes that Rashi actually might be coming for the opposite perspective, that you need to read all of it together and you're not able to make a break. That way, we need to treat it like it normally would so that no one catches on to the fact that there is a difference between Moshe and Yehoshua. So those are two very opposite perspectives, which is very interesting. But those are, again, just that detail aside. But to just review for a second, we have Rashi, which is the person who reads the 8 psukim has to read the entire thing, no breaks in the middle. And then we have the Rimigash, who tells me that the person who's reading beforehand cannot continue into the 8 psukim. Then we have the opinion of Rabbeinu Meshulam, quoted in all the Bali Tosfos. I gave you the one in Bava Basra because I thought it was the clearest and most succinct formulation. But Rabbeinu Meshulam has this very fascinating idea. Rabbeinu Meshulam says, in source number 6, HaRabbeinu Meshulam HaYematzrich Mikan Likros Le'echad Osan Ches Psukim Shelo Yikari Imo Shliach Sibor. So we're going to talk about this more next week. But what exactly happens when we lay? Who reads? So Rabbeinu Meshulam is saying that when you read the 8 Psukim, only the Ola reads, only the person who's getting the Aliyah, and the one who's called up, but not the Baal Kori. The Baal Kori does not read. That is Rabbeinu Meshulam. Yochid Kori Yosam, not two people. So make sure only the Ola reads and not the Baal Kori. So our Tosfos is actually extremely bothered by Rabbeinu Meshulam, based on our Gemara, right? And based on the history of it. The Gemara in Menachos is talking about the times of the Gemara. How did they read during the times of the Gemara? Did they have two people reading? Did they have a Baal Kori? No, they never had a Baal Kori. So what's Rabbeinu Meshulam talking about? All of the Torah was just the Ola and not the Baal Kori. Rabbeinu Meshulam, it makes absolutely no sense what you're saying. So that's why Tosfos actually, in our Tosfos, deviates and says, no, that's not the explanation of the Gemara. Read the Gemara simply like Rashi. But that is the opinion of Rabbeinu Meshulam, namely that the Shliach Sibor does not read the Baal Kori, does not read by those 8 psukim, only the Ola is going to read. We're going to get back to this idea next week when we talk about nowadays, are you supposed to read along with the Chazan or not? Is there Shomea Ka'ona in Kriyas HaTorah? So that's something we're going to talk about next week. So that's opinion number 3, Rabbeinu Meshulam, that the Yachid, the Ola, reads by himself, not the Baal Kori. Then we have this opinion of the Mordechai, quoted in source number 7. This is the Mordechai. Ma'ani Shemati Yachid, what does it mean, Yachid Kore? A Talmud Chacham. It has to be a Torah sage, It has to be someone who is really prominent. And that's what we mean, that a prominent person has to be the one who gets the who reads the eight psukim. And this is actually the source of what the idea that most of you, I assume, have already heard of what we call Chasam Torah. Right? And that's what the Ramah quotes in sources 8 and 9, that really that there's this minhag that the person who finishes the Torah should be a prominent person. He notes, it sounds like from the Ramah, that in his time, the custom was not that way, and even a katan can do it. Again, we'll get back to that point next week, because maybe it doesn't matter who gets the aliyah if there's a set bal kore, so it could even be a katan. But he notes that that's what the Mordechai sounds like. The Mordechai sounds like a Talmud Chacham based on Yachid Korei Osam. You have to have a distinguished member of society be the one to finish the Torah. And the Mishnah Berurah says that nowadays our minhag is to have a Chasan Torah. Not only that, you spend lots of money on it, a Chasan Torah and a Chasan Precious. Ideally, it should really be, according to the Mishnah Berurah, someone who is what he calls adorned in Torah. It should really be a Talmud Chacham. Again, I could only speak, can't speak for the Skokie Chevra, but in West Rogers Park, I could tell you, who got Chasan Torah and Chasan Brachos in Kins? Well, they gave it to the Rabbanim, because that's what you do. It's something that people are adorned with Torah. Again, he also says it's okay to give it to people who are important members of the community. So there's what to say about that balance. But there's something nice to be able to give it to the Rabbanim. But this is this idea which really emerges from this sugya of the eight psukim, the idea of Chasan Torah. Okay, so just to review for a second, we've seen four explanations of Yachid Korei Osam. Explanation number one is Rashi, no interruptions during the eight psukim. Explanation number two is the opinion of the Rimi Gash. Make sure to have a separation between the rest of the Torah and those eight psukim. Don't have one person read all the way through. Explanation number three is Rabbeinu Meshulam, that only the Ola reads, not the Bal Kore. Explanation number four is the opinion of the Mordechai, which is that it should be a Talmud Chacham, and that is the basis for our modern-day custom, unlike the Ramah, more like the Mishnah Berurah, and maybe the Aruch HaShulchan, which is for a Talmud Chacham to have a Chasan Torah. Any questions so far? Okay, now is where we get to the fun, and opinion number five, which is the opinion of the Rambam, because the Rambam has to take everything for a loop. So this is the Rambam is in source number 11, we're on page 3 of the Hebrew packet. I don't know what page on the...
Page 3.
Also page 3, amazing, of the English packet. So the Rambam basically says that you can read the last 8 psukim with less than 10 people. Less than 10 people, you could read these 8 psukim. That's Yachid Korei Osam, namely, you don't need a minion, Yachid Korei Osam. Forget about your minion. Normally by Kriyas HaTorah, we know from the Mishnah Megillah, you need 10 people. But by this Kriyas HaTorah, you do not need a minion. Forget about it.
You can just have a katan do it?
Can you have a katan do it? That's an interesting question. It's not clear. He seems to be focused more on the number more than who is doing it, but that might relate to the question that we're going to address next week. Again, the Ola versus the Bal Kol, right? But it seems from the Rambam, 10 people, not necessary, even though it's necessary for any other laning of Torah, you need 10 people, but not for this laning. And the obvious question is why? But then you get, and this was, I assume, part of the confusion when you guys were doing the sources, was the Ravid. What is the Ravid saving? The Ravid's very bothered. That's very clear. Again, the Ravid's not shy of taking on the Rambam and being critical. But lo shamanu davar zemi olam, he never heard of this. Masha kasev inyan zarus, it's strange. But then he has these three words at the end, and you're like, and he understands like Rashi and quotes the minhag of people who were machmer for like Rabbeinu Meshulam. But we'll leave that to the side for a second. But let's just focus on the last three words. V'hatzibor heichan halu. Where did the tzibor go? Where did the congregation go that the Rambam is talking about a case of less than a minion? So what does the Ravid mean? Again, sometimes maybe you would like a commentary on the Ravid's comments, but it's not clear what the Ravid means. So we have this strange opinion of the Rambam, and the Ravid's clearly bothered, but we're not sure what it means. So there seem to be two different schools of thought as to what the Ravid means. So explanation number one is that the Rambam and maybe the Ravid and maybe even the Rambam are talking about a very specific case. They're not talking about a case where you start with less than a minion. And I could just get up there and start right now reading the last 8 psukim from the Torah. Rather, they're talking about a case which we have a lot of parallels for, which we'll have to get back to, about people who leave. So there's a Yerushalmi in Megillah, the Jerusalem Talmud, has the case. Let's say you start Kriyas HaTorah with 10 people and people leave. So the Yerushalmi says that you can finish reading the Megillah. Okay? So the Kesef Mishnah and the Megal Oz both assume that the Rambam and the Ravid, they're having this type of conversation. We are talking not about a case where people are just starting reading by themselves. Rather, they started with a minyan, and then people left. So according to the Mishnas Yavetz, who is from the 20th century, Rav Zsolti. So Rav Zsolti sets it up as a very fundamental machlokas about the Rambam and the Ravid, about that idea in the Yerushalmi, which is, why is it that people, if you leave, you can finish a Davar Shebekdusha, finish a holy matter, right? You need 10 people. You need 10 people to do Kriyas HaTorah. So what happens if 3 people leave? Now you all of a sudden you could keep going? Why is that the case? So two possibilities. Possibility number one, it could be that to start a Davar Shebekdusha, to start a holy matter, you require 10 people. But you only need it to start. You don't need it to finish. And okay, now I have 7 people, but I had 10 people when I started. That's option number one. Or option number two is that somehow, some way, even though some of the congregation left, from the fact you started with 10 and you still have people there, it's as if your congregation is still there. It's as if the minyan is still there, which allows you license to proceed. And Rav Zsolti says that this is really the machlokas between the Rambam and the Ravid. But he ties it together with a different machlokas. So in order to fully understand the Rambam, we have to know that other machlokas, which it seems, according to Rav Zsolti, that there's a machlokas. Is there a requirement how many people are still in the room after they leave? Do you need a rove? Do you need a majority of 10 people, so you still need 6 and higher math? Or is it, no, like even if there's just one person left, that's still enough. So it seems to be a machlokas between the Ran, who requires a majority of people still there, versus the Sefer HaManik, who seems to say, even with just a minority, you have 2-3 people, you can still continue. So Rav Zsolti sets it up as follows. According to the Rambam, really the Rambam thinks that you require a rove, that if there's less than 6 people, you cannot keep going for Kriyas HaTorah. Number one. Number two is that if your tzibur is still there, we'll see, what's he assuming for the understanding the din? Namely, if I have a rove, if I have the majority of the tzibur, it makes sense to say, like his second idea, namely, the reason why you can keep going is because it's like I still have a congregation here. Yes, if I only had 2 or 3 people, obviously the congregation's still not there. But when you have 6 or 7 or 8, so then the congregation's really there. Just a couple of them, you know, had to catch a cup of coffee before they went to work. Right? So, but it's fundamentally the congregation is still there. And for that, according to Rav Zsolti, is the Chiddush by the Shmona Psukim. Namely, normally by Kriyas HaTorah, to continue going when you start with 10, you need Rov according to the Rambam. But by the 8 Psukim, you do not need a majority. You can have 1 or 2, and that's fine. And that's a special, unique idea by the 8 Psukim. That's the Rambam.
Is he suggesting then that those 8 Psukim have a lesser kedusha?
So we're going to get back to that point in a couple of minutes in the Rambam. It's not clear from Rav Zsolti that that's the case. I don't think that that's clear from him. I think he's just assuming that for whatever reason, again, because it's written in tears or whatever it is, we're going to say that there's some different status that you don't, that the halacha is going to be different.
But he must base his decision on something unique to these 8 psukim.
Yeah, so again, the Gemara says it's unique because it's written with tears. Holy ishtinu, ishtinu. But why, which I think it's more, you're going to be more satisfied when we get back to the Rav, but exactly that point. So that's the Rambam. Namely, you need a majority to stay because it's about keeping the tzibur there, but you don't require that by the 8 psukim. Versus the Ravid. The Ravid holds, like the Sefer HaManig, that even if you don't have the majority, why? You can still finish. Because the reason is going to be very simple. Because you only need to start with 10 people. But once you start with 10 people, you can keep going even if you have 1, even if you have 2. And therefore, according to him, if that's always the case by rest of Kriyas HaTorah, that you could keep going with just 1 or 2, so then obviously there's no difference by the 8 psukim. So what chiddush, what a new novel idea have you taught me, Rambam? I always could keep going with just 1 or 2, and therefore you're not telling me anything, and I don't understand this halacha. It should just follow the normal rules, namely, even if you have less than rov, you can keep going. That is explanation number one for the Rambam. Namely, they are arguing about this idea when people leave. Is it about, according to the Rambam, it's about keeping the tzibur there, and therefore you require rov, unlike Shmona Psukim? Or according to the Ravid, it's going to be, you could start You only need to start to have 10. You only need 10 people to start, but to finish, you could even have one or two. And therefore, what chiddush are you telling me about the eight sukkim? But I think the number two, the second type of suggestion, is a much more compelling suggestion, which is the approach of we'll call the briskers, because it's really, I saw this first in the Rav and the Rav Salvi, Rav Yosef Dov Halevi, but he also, Rav Shechter notes that it also really appears in the Griz, the brisker Rav, the Rav's uncle, in Menachos. But he understands that the Ravitz question is extremely different. So if you saw on source number 15, which is, again, Rav Shechter's notes from the Rav Shir, he basically says, the Ravitz is asking a much more fundamental question, which is, this is a Davar Shebekdusha. You need 10 people. What are you talking about? Why would it be that you don't require 10 people for this laning? All other lanings in the Torah, you require 10 people. Why not here? And that's what Rav Chaim asked in source number 16. What do you mean this is a Davar Shebekdusha? Require 10 people. So that's question number one. According to the Rambam, if this is a Davar Shebekdusha, and all Davar Shebekdushas require 10 people, why don't you require 10 people? Question number one. Question number two, which, again, you could argue whether it's a compelling question or not, is quoted in source number 17, the Nefesh HaRav by Rav Shechter, in the name of the Rav, that why did Moshe write it in tears? The whole Gemara is strange. Moshe knew for a bunch of years that he was going to die. It's the fate of any other man. And he knew he wasn't getting into Eretz Yisrael. He knew he was going to die outside of the land of Israel. So, guess what? It came time to write about your death. So Moshe Rabbeinu is going to say, he knew this was coming. He knew that they were literally about to enter the land. Why did he cry more about writing it than just knowing it? So that's the Rav Shechter's question, which he quotes from the Rav. So to answer this idea, the Rav has a very fundamental approach to be able to understand Torah generally. He says, the process of writing the Torah in general, in Kol HaTorah Kula, was as follows. Normally, Moshe gets a command from God. Moshe commands the people, that's the first thing he does, commands the people, relays the command to the Klal Yisrael, and only then does Moshe write it. First a command to the people, and only then is Moshe going to write it down. And the Rav says, that's step number one. Step number two is when you command something to the people, that gives the subject matter words of Torah. What does the word Torah mean? Anyone know? Teach. So in order for something to get the status of Torah, it first needed to be taught. And only then, I am writing down the Torah. So therefore, every time Moshe gets a command from God, I'm talking about the Karban Pesach, I'm talking about, Chelev or Dam or the Isser or whatever it is, I always first need to command the Jews and only then write it down. However, and that's, according to the Rav, the way it gets the status of the written Torah, the Torah Shebechsav. Only by first teaching and then writing. But what happens when it comes to the eight psukim? What do the eight psukim describe? They describe Moshe's death. Not only that, they're written in past tense. So you can't tell me that Moshe should first teach. Let me, teach Klal Yisrael about how I died. That doesn't make any sense. Because Moshe cannot teach that to Klal Yisrael because it's given over in past tense. So first, Moshe has to write it. And then, later point, maybe it'll be taught. But right now, Moshe did not follow the normal process of imbibing these words with Kedusha by teaching it with first, because he was not able to do so. And therefore, this is going to answer both our questions. Somehow, and I think this was what Nathan was trying to get at a minute ago, and the Rav actually has two different ways of presenting this idea. Rav Shechter says in two different occasions, he said this last idea differently. And I think the practical difference between the two is exactly your question from a second ago. Which is the way that the Rav in his notes the Rav's notes on Megillah, the way he says it is, how did Moshe normally write over the Torah? He gave it over first to the Tzibor. So therefore, when we read it, what do we require? A Tzibor, which is defined by 10 people. Versus the eight psukim, who did Moshe share that with? How did he write?
Binun.
No, he only wrote it by himself. Right? He didn't teach it first. He couldn't teach it first because it was in past tense. So Moshe only wrote it by himself. And therefore, the Rav argues, again, this is the one way he presented it. Therefore, the Rav argues he is able to, it could be done biyachid. And that explains the Rambam. And that also explains why he cried. He cried because he wasn't able to give this the status of Kedusha in his lifetime. implying that afterwards, and Rav Schechter says it explicitly, from Yoshua, Yoshua was able to give it its full Kedusha, but since it was originally written down only as an individual, therefore we can have an individual read it. But that's why Moshe is going to cry, because it didn't attain its full Kedusha in his lifetime. The Rav, in the other presentation, which is quoted in Nefesh HaRav, actually says that somehow, some way, and what this means is it's quite radical, that there's some flaw when it comes to those eight psukim. That in order to require 10 people for laning, it needs to be a laning that's coming from a section of the Torah that's sanctified by Moshe. And this was not sanctified by Moshe, and that will be a consequences for generations to come that an individual could read it. Because this did not get its full Kedusha, again, stemming from that idea. The Rav also uses the idea to explain Rashi and Rabbeinu Meshulam, but we'll leave that to the side. He also wonders how many people you require, 3, 6, 9, but we'll leave that to the side. But just to review what we said for a second, we saw in our start number one with the machlokas between Tosas and Rav Rishonim versus the Rush about why we require Bakore. We saw 5 different explanations about what does it mean Yachid Kore Yosam. Again, does he have to read the entire thing without breaks? It can't. You have to make separate the previous one. Do not read it with the Bakore. I forgot the 4th one. The 5th one, that you don't need a minion. And finally, we saw this idea, 2 different ways of understanding the machlokas between the Rambam and the Ravid. Is it, namely, number one, about this idea of the tzibur leaving in the middle and finishing? And why that is? Is it a din in keeping the tzibur there? Or is it about only the beginning of a darshah kedusha requiring 10 people? Or is it this more fundamental idea that Torah has been defined by Moshe teaching it first and only then writing it down, which was lacking by the 10 psukim, which is a very interesting idea. And Rav Chaim has a very similar idea, a famous idea between Nevi'im and Ksuvim, that maybe Nevi'im, what's the difference between Nevi'im and Ksuvim? Why are there differences? So Rav Chaim argues that Nevi'im was first said over and then written down, unlike Suvim, which were first written and then written down, but really they have the same level of Kedusha, which very much dovetails nicely with what the Rav is suggesting here. But we'll leave it. Next week we'll talk about Shomea Ka'ona and, again, some of the questions of Katan and a blind person and what the role is of the Balkore versus the person who's actually getting the Aliyah. Sorry, I went a little over time.